Welcome to Pipe and Slip Mats Volume 8, the Summer Slammer with Scott, James and Tunde.
Volume 8?
I know.
Is that terribly low or does that feel like we're...
It's really low. We've been doing it for, over 15 years.
We often make this joke, don't we, that we average one a year, but of course it's not even one a year.
No, it's like 0.5 a year.
Oh, it's been lockdown now.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tunde. Yeah, that damn lockdown.
Yeah, which was... Sorry, 5 years ago, of course. To be fair to us, I feel like we're on the defensive. Yeah. To be fair to us, we did record a show, 5 months ago. We tried something different, didn't we? We put a couple of tripods up, a couple of phones, took some recordings. Nothing happened.
We've done nothing with it. Nobody has taken up the mantle of, I can do some video editing.
No.
And I think the reason for that is none of us know how to do any video editing.
Didn't you not send this to someone?
He basically ignored us.
Shout out, Chris.
Yeah. Get on with it, mate.
So, I guess that'll become like those beauty... It's like, of course, they've just unearthed recently, John Lennon's recordings, for example, that they've remade.
Or the Beatles. 6 hour long epic from the Beatles.
Or Prince's re-recording of all the Michael Jackson songs. Mm.
Yeah. I think it'll be something similar.
Spoken of in the same breath, I imagine.
We should... I just need to quickly get this in because we're sort of joking and feeling defensive, but people have actually been asking. I've had messages in LinkedIn. I need to shout out someone who only goes by the name Duffy. Duffy, we're here, we're back, this show's for you. My friend Rob Allen, he was asking after it. Alex Perkin. People are going, when's the next show? So I feel like we're really answering our critics.
Absolutely. Well, not our critics, our supporters, our evangelists, let's call them.
Our super fans.
Yeah. So, I mean, without further ado, should we go straight in with the first tune?
Come on.
Here we go. Good, isn't it?
I like the fact that it feels like... Hold on, what year was this?
89.
But it feels...
I was four.
He wasn't.
You're quite literally older than me. It feels like they didn't feel the need to just bang the tempo up in those days for the sake of it, because you almost expect it, because the way we listen to so much now, that it's going to rock it. But it doesn't. It almost chugs.
Yeah, it's almost a chugger.
I love how much it chugs. It's so like a kind of electro. Tell us about it, Scott.
So it's Roberta Flack Ooh, Ooh, Look Out, Here It Comes, which is an awesome title in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it's the Steve Hurley house remix. Steve Hurley, you'll know, Steve Silk Hurley did Jack Your Body and about a million other brilliant house remixes back in the 80s and 90s, actually. But I just love it. It was big at the Hacienda. And it actually, what's interesting about that is it shows you that when people think of the Hacienda, they might think of, oh, it was quite ravey. But actually, it really wasn't. It played a lot of cool, more down-tempo house tunes, you know, thanks to people like Park and Pickering.
I mean, I do remember that song, but I think I remember a different mix. You were saying it could have been the Arthur Baker one.
Yeah, so that was on the B-side, the one we've just listened to.
Well, it was just, like, a bit more back to basics, mm-hmm. as in not... Back to basics, as in the club. Back to basics. Yeah. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah. You mean as in closer to what the original would have sounded like?
No, as in the club, Back to Basics.
Oh, okay, right.
You know, the one in Leeds?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I see it there every week.
Yeah. Which would have I made that up, or is that, would you say that the Arthur Baker version would have been more of a Back to
the
Basics?
The Arthur Baker version, as I remember, I haven't listened to it for a while, was a bit more.
Should we just have a quick blast?
Sure.
No, not the one. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, when you said this sounded like a Back to Basics tune, I'll be honest, I spent every weekend in Back to Basics and the Arthur Baker disco stuff would not really have got played.
Do you know what? Maybe one of the many super fans who message you...
Those four of them, yeah.
Maybe they could...
I met one at a party. I was at a party, shout out to Darren's Christmas party, and a guy came up to me, we got talking, I told him I used to work for Ministry of Sound, and he just out of the blue said, I listened to this brilliant podcast. I swear to... I wish I was making it up. Called Pipe and Slip Mats. Do you know it? And I went, I am one part of that. And that was
You are Pipe and Slip Mats.
Yeah, and that was... You know, I wish I could remember his name. He's a lovely bloke. Hello, if you're listening. But yeah, it was a real... I mean, it was, you know...
Well, he will be listening.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the 1%, of course. Those super fans are really important driving the engine. The original track that you've just played prior to the whatever Arthur Baker mix that we've just attempted to find... That used to be on a mix that I used to play all the time, and I'm pretty certain they mixed it into that Angie Stone. Actually, no, it was the Arthur Baker version was quite disco, wasn't it? And they mixed it into that Angie Stone record. What's that famous, beautiful Angie
Something
Stone?
About Miss You?
Yeah. What is it, Tunde?
Is it called Miss You?
I think... It's the Backstabbers sample, isn't it?
Right.
Anyway,
I can see that working well.
Dun, yeah, it's amazing.
Anyway, beautifully, and then there was a really lovely bit of the mix. I'm not making any sense because I can't remember the name of the mix. A bit like you can't remember the name of the chap at the Christmas party. Darren's famous Christmas party. I don't remember an invite.
Do you want to know... So that song, the Angie Stone one, I know I'm digressing a little bit. There's an amazing singer-songwriter called Andrea Martin. She's passed away now. She was great. She had such a raspy voice. And she wrote that song, and hopefully Angie Stone isn't listening to this. For some reason, just wasn't in the best frame of mind to cut the record. So most of those parts, apart from the verse, is Andrea.
Oh, don't tell me that.
The ooze, yeah, the rasp. But the great thing about it is she did that, and then she sang Show Me Love. I'm not sure if she wrote on it, but she was the first person to demo it.
What, as in Robin X?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So, that's her. I mean, that's her idea. And she's done so many amazing songs. Yeah, just before she passed, she wrote an amazing song with us for Billy Porter, which he loved. It was like, it was almost like he said, like, she reached into his soul and wrote what he was thinking in his life story.
Well, I think we can all agree that Roberta Flack, who sadly died not that long ago, February 2025, that track was brilliant, and all the way back in 1989, and it got me thinking about other stuff from 89. 89 was round about the birth of, you know, club culture for me, and it made me start thinking about what I used to wear, and I can tell you exactly what my outfit was in 89. I'll outline it. Purple Om t-shirt.
Okay.
You know, a t-shirt that basically screams, I am part of a particular culture that you might not be, but if you know.
Sure.
Pair of Timberlands, for punishing the dance floor.
Which ones are?
The boots, you know, the sort of tan-coloured boots.
The hip-hop ones, not the meat pie ones.
I don't know what the meat pie ones.
The meat pies with a ridge around them.
Yeah, no, not those.
No, not those, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Kind of a smooth circular shell.
You're talking about like the DMX Timberlands.
Yeah, big old boot.
Could be, yeah. I mean, we're talking 89. Hip-hop. There wasn't a massive range of Timberlands back then. They were essentially a hiking boot before they became
No, because you had the meat pie ones, which the casuals wore. So if you're wearing like a Stone Island or CP company with some chippy jeans, you'd wear those.
Oh, you still have chippy jeans?
Yeah.
You can C17.
If you was wearing Kalkahini or FUBU, you'd wear the other ones.
Wasn't FUBU a bit later? Was FUBU 89? Maybe I was a bit...
I think...
late to the party on FUBU. But and
Timberland boots on a dance floor, did that work? Was that a big thing?
Weirdly, yes. You know, they're built for walking, so they're also built for dancing for 12 hours.
But there's dancing, and
they are heavy, but, you know, it's a good workout.
But, Scott, I've seen you dance, and you really glide into the dance floor. You sort of slide in from the side.
You're not going to be going toe-heel, and
like entrance stage right. Did you do that in your Timberlands?
It's probably a bit more clumpy. And then jeans, I can't remember, maybe Joe Bloggs, baggy ones. Remember Joe Bloggs? You know, I would imagine that would be what I was wearing. Then later, obviously, we went on to when we got into the kind of more Balearic housey era, you know, out of hardcore, then you had the Michiko Kishino, the John Richmond Destroy.
Sure.
I used to have this Duffer of St. George nylon fisherman's waistcoat that I was so proud of.
Fisherman's, oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, with a lot of zips.
Yeah.
And I was so proud of it.
That was an early Keith from the Prodigy look.
I'm not
as
sure
well.
If I don't know whether this is cool. I used to wear Fila hiking boots, the Bronf, a Nevica ski jacket, and then a pair of cut down jeans. And that was me.
What I'm loving about the commonality is the sheer kind of sort of extremity that was planned. It's hiking, it's skiing, it's like mountaineering, whereas everyone's just out to get off on their tits at a rave. Like, it's a surprising ensemble for the surroundings.
I think I knew when, you know, like, sort of house music fashion had jumped the shark, is when everyone started wearing these sort of massive, billowing, Byronic, romantic poet white shirts.
That was me.
Like you were wearing this sort of giant kind of parachute of
like a pirate.
When was this?
This would have been, I'm going to say, we're in sort of 95, 96 at this point. What we're moving into the handbag house
kind
era.
Of 18th century kind of, yeah.
And you know, if you could have flowing hair. Locks, yeah. Flowing hair as
I remember
well.
That.
And if you had the flowing hair, it showed how long you'd been in the game.
A man without a ponytail in that era was, you'd barely begun.
I didn't have one.
Yeah, you were naive.
Not a man.
That is so mental. Because in drum and bass, that was not what anyone was wearing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It was Stone Island, Valentino, Moschino, Versace, with some sort of Nike TN.
Nice, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm considerably younger than all of you, of course, and I just remember our early foray into it, and there was a terrible amount of waistcoats and bandanas going on.
Yeah,
and I remember even then, and I was brand new in the scene, thinking it's jumped the shark, and it was a scene that I'd barely even seen before, but it was like, this doesn't look good.
No.
These waistcoats aren't worth it. It's a John Leslie vibe.
So moving on from clubbers wearing caftans, is it time for our next tune? I think it is.
Is there a caftan theme?
There should be. I'll think about that during the next tune. We'll be right back.
That's one. Yes, it's like a Manchester tune.
It's really good, isn't it? But don't you think it takes ages? It takes ages to get going. Now, we all quite like that first bit, and it's bleeps here and it's bleeps there, and we're all, our little shoulders are going it. But am I being just a gnarly old man saying, it feels like a different time where you had the space to allow it to happen? Because when it starts kicking in, it's so fantastic. But what has that amount of time these days given to it before it starts really going?
People expect an early hook.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have an early hook. It takes, as you say, it takes a minute, maybe 2 minutes to get to, you know, the kind of crescendo point of the track. But it's so, you're absolutely right, so good. 1992, we haven't said what it is, Coco Steel and Love Bomb. The track's called Feel It. And I first heard it on a Mixmag cover mount, a really early copy of Mixmag magazine cover mount. It's on Warp Records, and it's just kind of weird and you know, a bit very bleepy because it's on Warp, and it's got that kind of techno feel. I absolutely love it. Chris Coco, one of the people that made it, was the editor of DJ Mag, actually an early editor of DJ Mag. Yeah. But no, I absolutely love it.
Is he Northern?
I don't think he's Northern. No, I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't think he is, though.
He's dead to Tundi, then.
It reminds, you know, just thinking about tapes, obviously, and James, I know you've got a take on mixtapes, but I had, you know, back in the day, I think the full set of Eclipse mixtapes. I had a lot of Essential mixtapes recorded as well. I remember CJ McIntosh being a particularly good one, but tapes are coming back, is that right?
Oh, tapes are huge, but I like you. I really, as soon as you say tapes, I'm thinking of the big gatefold 16 tapes in a, like, World Dance started producing them. Do you remember? And it was tape after tape, and it was everyone, Dr. Escache and Dr. Scott. Yeah, but huge, and they were like big kind of frames on the walls of record shops. You go and buy your 12 six-pack tapes. But cassette sales are absolutely flying. 20% up year on year cassette sales, like, significant thing again. And there's cassette clubs going around now of all different genres. This is not necessarily, you know, pipe and slip mat test. This is all sorts of little cute tape clubs. There was one only the other day, for example, I think it was the guys from Salt who were to do with it. Like, different genre music are starting to use it because people want to feel again. They need the physical. It's not just novelty. It's not like, oh, and then I'm going to stick it on my wall. They feel like they've got something. They're taking something out of it. They're being a part of something more. Tapes are back in a big way.
I mean, what I remember from tapes, and I still have a box of them, is that I used to, you know, there's no Shazam in those days, as you know. So I would take the tape in a Walkman to the record Crash Records in Leeds and stick the Walkman on the guy behind the counter, which I'm sure he loved, and play him something that I'd found at 45 minutes in on an Essential mix and go, have you got this?
Oh, that's cool.
And I was just one of many, I'm sure, who trooped through the shop that day doing it. Because it was hard to find records, right? It was, you know.
The tape was our whole device. You know, we sat here with Tony, who's an actual producer, and he makes and he edits and creates every single day. But if you think about it, different to vinyl, the tape was the whole device, because often it gets confused. It often gets confused solely as your playback vehicle, your playback device. We play back with vinyl, we play back with CD. But tape is different because you also burnt it and made your own and created, and playlists were everything, and tapes you made for people, and the whole kind of, you know, Nick Hornby making a tape for someone thing that has since blown up and is like a really culturally relevant point, and people made them for girlfriends and they made them for their mums and their little memories and how you edited them and what you did on the cases and the artwork. They were such creative little devices all in a tape, way more than just this is a means of playing it back.
I mean, for me, I think yes, but I think,
but that's shit.
No. I think the tape where it was the DJs recorded at the raves was instrumental in spreading the word and spreading the tunes, because I suppose at the time my favourite DJs were Top Buzz, Groove Rider, Slipmat, and Lime I loved. And some of these records weren't coming out for a year. They were on dub plate for a year and a half. So it was the only way you could hear these records. Do you know what I mean? It's the only way you could hear what was going on and what the progression was within the scene.
So was it expected? Was it I need the tape from Fantasia when it comes out. Like, did you know the tape would be coming out and that was almost your way into the music that had been played?
What was the club in Wolverhampton? God, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, when they put out tapes, when if Groove Rider played, like, played every 3 months, you was waiting to get that tape.
Yeah, right.
Because you knew. Because
so it was about newness. It was about discovering the records that they were playing.
Yeah.
Also, I think, crucially, thinking about the medium, tapes were the only thing you could play in your Fiesta XR2, right? Yeah. You're not playing violin there. There's no CD player in there. So they were the currency of the boys that had the beefed-up sound systems in the beefed-up cars. And, you know, that's where, actually, well, Tunde, you back me up on that, you get a pretty good auditory experience inside the car,
that's
right?
That's amazing, yeah.
I remember being in your car when driving to festivals years and years later, and you were still playing tapes from 10 or 15 years previous to that.
Didn't I play you one of me DJing on a pirate station in Bristol?
Bristol, hold tight.
That's right. That was the famous phrase that James still rips me about. At one point, I do say the words, Bristol, hold tight. I think I also say keep it locked at one point.
You really do. But good music being played. You can't off bang it out. I miss tapes. I need to get involved.
So since we're talking about tapes and raves, is it time, I think, maybe to go into a couple more ravey tunes for the rave section?
Yeah, the rave section. Love the rave section.
All right, let's go. You know, it's one of those where I think nostalgia got the better of me, because I think at sort of 3 a.m. in the eclipse, I was like, this is some of the best music I've ever heard.
But it isn't.
And it's called Lost by the Gonzo. It's on Perfecto, weirdly, which is mostly known as a Goa Trance label. But it is, it's a bit simple, I guess. Tunde, I'm sure you've got an opinion on this.
Yeah, it's not killing me softly. It sort of feels like just, it doesn't feel that cohesive. in the terms of what they were trying to do in taking you on a journey using samples to pull you into different emotional, rhythmical states. It just seems...
producer feedback for it's shit. Yeah.
Can I...
No, it's not, and I'm being honest.
I mean,
it just
you
felt
that really. Sure, you
yeah,
suck,
and it felt like
yeah.
I was done.
Yeah.
There was one sample...
Oh, it felt like I was being punished.
There was one sample in there that reminds me of the, you know, the Homeboy Hippie and the Funky Dreadsock.
Yeah, oh, the wow. Woo-woos is the...
Yeah. Have we ever played that on the
yeah,
show?
Yeah, we have. Oh,
yeah. We do this, though, every week. It would be traditional if we didn't, if we said... And they say, yes, we did. Which is incredible. We've only had 8 shows. Transpose, we've played virtually every record known to man.
But, yeah, OK, so, yeah, I think we're all agreed that Lost the Gonzo is not...
Lost in Time.
...is not the track it was.
No.
Yeah.
No, fittingly. No.
Yeah. But let's see how we go with the next rave tune, which is a bit more of a piano anthem. It was huge when I went...
Is it Entrance?
It's not a million miles away.
Is it Oceania?
There's a connecting thread. Let's have a listen.
You know, that's right up my alley.
Yeah, this is Hyper Go Go, Never Let Go.
Come on. And maybe I wanted to love it too much. You know me, you know my style. You probably thought, yeah, this is right up James's street. But again, I just felt like I was painting by numbers, going through the motions.
For someone who loved Oceanic so much.
I don't know if I did. I think it became a joke.
I thought this would be the right up your street. Right? This was a end of the night classic at the State nightclub in Liverpool around 1992. You know, lights come
I think
on.
That's it. Do you know what it reminds me of? I think I've got PTSD.
PTSD, yeah.
Of, you know, people who wear cat suits but really skinny because they've taken too much whiz.
Where's he going with
it? It's quite a niche fear.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Go on.
In LA gear trainers with a flashy lights. And it's like, they've all chewing gum and they've all been like, don't like it, it's too heavy. Then this comes on and they start doing the dancing and you're like,
I can't imagine the level of, I mean, that the detail on that.
The thing is, I know exactly what he means.
Yeah.
I literally know exactly what he means.
I've been sat here for 2 hours, it's too heavy. Then this comes on and they start doing the skipping.
When you're DJing to them, people come up to the booth and go, have you got anything that I can dance to? Or my mate's a DJ, do you mind if he jumps on for a bit? Because he'll get everyone dancing.
Luckily, I never had that. But
what have you? You must have had some.
Look at Cindy. Who's coming up to Cindy and going, my mate's a DJ, can he have a go?
That's true, yeah. But you must have had some adverse feedback.
Actually, when I started out, people would ask like for requests. But a lot of times I'd be like...
How would you deal with it?
Yeah, cool. See, if it's a good one.
Yeah.
And this isn't at like clubs. This is sort of
bar mitzvahs.
Bar mitzvahs. No, but let's say it's in like Ashton or Stockport, which is basically, it's still ravers, but it's in a bar or something.
Yeah,
when I was first starting. You know, as soon as you drop, especially if you tease that tune. So let's say you're playing a set and someone comes and goes, excuse me, we got Young MC Know-How.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, cool. And then you give it three tracks and they're still looking at you. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, bam. Wow. Now I'll get really excited, take it out.
Yeah. So you're just doing it for the wind up?
No, you just build it up. And then when you drop it and you do it with a mix, like, I can't remember where it was.
They go mental. You do
the, yeah, they go mental.
To be honest, also, that's a great shout.
Yeah.
Anyone who's denying know-how to the dance floor shouldn't be up there DJing.
I agree.
I mean, I think any DJ should play know-how at any point.
Yeah. But you can't play it twice.
No.
So it's like, you're not going to play it 2 minutes into your set, you're going to build up to that, aren't you? You've got to ebb and flow.
Well, from two tracks that haven't gone down as well, perhaps, as I thought they were.
Tepid.
We're going to move up to 1994 to a... it was on Junior Boy's Own label, this track.
Nice.
And I love Junior Boy's Own, full stop. But this is unlike a lot of the more... I want to say commercial, even though Junior Boy's Own wasn't a particularly commercial label. They had the breakout hits like Music Express and London Express. This, for me, was a sleeper. People slept on this particular track.
Tell us, first, before we get into it, give us a bit more. For those who don't know, there will be some people who aren't you, us even, of a certain era. Tell a little bit more about Junior Boy's Own, origin.
It was an amazing label. So Farley and Heller were the kind of originators of the label, but it was... You know, it put out an incredible body of work from about 92 to probably into the 2000s. I mean, the Chemical Brothers started on Junior Boy's Own.
I never knew that.
Underworld started on Junior Boy's Own. I mean, they were absolute tastemakers of the time. And I don't really think they got... They did at the time, but I don't think they get the props that they deserve now, actually.
Was Express 2, were they...
Yeah,
they were on Junior Boy's Own. Yeah.
But weren't they...
Express 2 was Rocky, Diesel, Ashley, Beadles. It wasn't Farley and Heller, but Farley and Heller were running the label.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all knew each other. You know, they're all mates.
Chemical Brothers were called the Dust Brothers.
They were, but there was a US hip-hop act called the Dust Brothers that made them change their
name. And doing all the trivia question of the day.
But, yeah, I mean...
No, they did the soundtrack for...
The Dust Brothers?
Yeah, the Dust Brothers did the soundtrack for Fight Club.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay. All right, so, yeah, you can see why they probably
that's
want...
That's a good bet.
They probably want the Manchester Dust
Brothers. I need to check that now, just in case.
Fight Club, I only know that they end on that Pixies record.
Yeah.
Where Is My Mind? Yeah, which is fantastic.
So anyway, the track I'm going to play is called
Can we shout out Wild... Terry Farley?
Yeah, Terry Farley, shout out for signing, and actually for making this record, it's a Farley and Hera production. It's called Wild Love, and this is their Roach Motel alias, but it's essentially Farley and Hera from 1994. Let's go. We'll be right back.
Wild Peach, I think I love you, but I wanna know for sure. Wild Peach, I love you, but I wanna know for sure.
Bloody love that. So contrast to the last two. I don't even know if that much goes on, but I'm such a sucker for a grooving bass, a funk pedal, a wah-wah, but it goes on. And then you combine that, honestly, with the name. I'm sorry, brand man coming at me, but Roach Motel, what a wicked... I need to call Terry up and say, mate, we need to get this back in the game. Roach Motel's a terrific name. I just love it. Now, I go back to what I was saying earlier. It feels like you need the time to allow it to breathe, and I don't know if people would these days. What sort of year was this?
I'm going to say 94.
Just fabulous. But in 2025, is anyone making that?
The reason that I suggested this is because I watched a Ricardo Villalobos set from an Ibiza after party, and it can't have been more than a couple of years old. And he was going back.
Set the scene.
He was going back to back with someone. The sun's blazing through the glass roof of a villa. There's about 300 people going nuts to this track. And, you know, Villalobos, as I don't know if you've seen much of him DJing, but he gets quite loose and he's falling all over the decks. And that only added to the kind of spectacle. And that track is going off. And the sort of 30-second TikTok video I saw is that hook, the spoken word.
But also,
hook.
That's such a time and place. 6 a.m. with the sun blazing by that point. Like you were saying, I think, as we were just listening, you can't have it going haywire and lunatic sounds because no one's got any energy. But that pulsing, thumping rhythm.
Locked into that rhythm.
Locked in is a great phrase for it. Tunde, you're going to disagree completely?
Well, two things. I get it. I think if I was at, what was he called again? Los Lobos.
Ricardo. he's a kind of minimal slash techno DJ who likes to party.
If I was
hard.
A minimal slash techno punter, I could get down with it.
I'd like an invite to that afters.
The one thing which I wonder if people non-minimal techno punters or DJs can get is, I've been to places like this and it's like it doesn't change for 5 minutes, then it breaks down and everyone start whooping, and then it'll come back in exactly the same and everyone's like cheering. I'm like,
I've got to
what
disagree.
The fuck's just happened? It's just exactly the same as what it was 5 minutes before that.
I think what you're describing, by the way, and you're going to have a far better articulation of what it is musically, but it is my problem with current modern music. When I mentioned this maybe on a previous show when I was in Mykonos last year, and it was a night, and I think the night was going to culminate in Black Coffee. This wasn't Black Coffee DJing, but it was music of that ilk. That is, of course, nothing's bad, but I couldn't find its soul. I couldn't find why it was interesting or entertaining actually at any point. This, for me, but maybe this is the beautiful subjectivity of music, this is so different to that. That is this never goes anywhere. Where's the soul? Where's the interest? Where's the hook? But this has, for me, maybe I'm showing my age. This feels like something very, very different.
Yeah, I like I say, I can't. I sort of I understand where it's coming from, but I just don't understand it. Do you know what I mean? It's like you could get down with it, but you'd also be like, I have no idea if I've been listening to the same song for the past 3 hours, or I don't know how many songs he's made.
Sound like my dad.
I come from a scene where the scene is dictated by the tempo rather than anything else, so I can remember having conversations with people who was like, Yeah, I didn't like him today. I didn't like that DJ. He played too fast. He was playing at like 1-2-4. I'm like, why? What should he play at? He's like, well, we prefer stuff at 1-2-1, 1-2-2.
Wow.
I'm like, that's mental. Where in drum, it's like, it's 1-7-3. If it's 1-7-5, it still works. If it's 1-7-1, it still works. It's if you use a Spandau Ballet sample or a Slipknot sample, if the bass drops, it works. So I suppose I'm coming from a scene like that, so to be so picky, like I can like minimal house, but I can't like minimal techno slash tech house. Is mental.
I think
to me,
maybe there's a real subjectivity, and I'm surprised that I'm such a fan of this quite brooding, building, arguably chugging. We've played on the show before Westbam Alarm Clock, and it's an almost identical tempo. It's an almost identical pace. It builds occasionally and might stick the ring of an alarm clock in there, and that's the entire kind of breakdown, and that's it. And weirdly, I love it. And Scott introduced me to that, God knows how many years ago. That for me is in the same category.
Like I said, I would say the Westbourne Land Club, I hate that. I get
forgotten. He hated it that much.
Yeah.
And if we do a show together in six weeks, if we're at Pikes and that comes on, I will
be
leaving?
Smashing the decks.
No,
out.
My fingers will be out. I'll be doing my little shuffle, and I'll be in it.
Well, I'm just saying, banana.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I just don't think. I'll be in it because I'll be in the environment where I'm enjoying myself a bit of it. But I'm not sure it's going to stop me in my tracks. I'll be dancing to it where I thought.
Yes, listeners, these old men are going to Ibiza for Tundi's birthday.
This summer.
Yeah, 30th birthday.
It'll probably be in past tense by the time the listeners hear this.
It probably will.
It'll be interesting to know whether West Ham Alarm Clock was played.
It seems unlikely. But as I said, it was sparked by watching this Ricardo Villalobos video. He is known as being a party animal. There's a lot of videos of him looking, you know, fairly out of it while DJing. And it did get me thinking about other DJs who were famous caners. Obviously there's Brandon Block, who was a bit more kind of cartoon like than anything, that whole "oi oi you nutbags, let's go mental" kind of nonsense. But there's also that famous, have you seen, there's a famous video of Scream, you know, DJ Scream, basically throwing up behind the decks because he's so out of it, and then getting back up and DJing. And I remember being at Space many years ago when Sasha was so out of it, I watched him, because I was near the DJ booth because I'm a train spotter, trying to light a cigarette and moving the lighter around the front of the cigarette and taking about a minute to actually catch it. But then watching him lean over and produce this sort of smooth, perfect 10-minute transition mix of two or three tracks, almost like even though he can't light a fag, he's so... He's got such good muscle memory, you know, savant, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to DJing, that bit of it isn't a problem, but lighting a cigarette at the right end is.
Flipping brilliant.
It made me think about
I just think, find a bit on what you're saying here is context. You've heard this track in a specific moment, in a set and an afters, in Ibiza, in a villa, as the sun's coming up, and people can't go nuts. And that's a really interesting thing. That context is everything. We've talked on the show before. In fact, there's a big circular piece here because Terry Farley's very vocal about phones, for example, in clubs. We talked about this before. People holding up their mobile. Oshawa is a massive culprit of everyone going. They're just waiting for the moment every 3.5 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever it might be. Where is that dramatic piece of theatre that's lit up like a Christmas tree that I'm going to take and stick on my reels on my TikTok? This is the polar opposite. But it's a moment in a different way. And I think it appeals and finds you in a different way. And maybe I'm just yearning for that. I can see that time and think that's so fun.
I think it's a great point. I mean, there's that classic picture of, I think they're called, is it Klein Music? And there's a picture of the three of them DJing. And it's just a forest of phones. No one's dancing. It's a forest of phones. And I hate to bring this sort of thing up because I know that I'm old and I know that I'm not that seen anymore. But it does look weird.
Yeah.
It looks fundamentally odd to me.
It's something ultimately different. That's almost appealing in a completely new way. A forest of phones is a lovely word, by the way, or phraseology rather, and it's lit up and it's interesting and it looks like an interesting visual, but it ain't the same. It's not when you mention the Hacienda early and you see footage from that. It's not, what's that? What am I thinking of, that epic footage that goes around every 3 weeks?
Oh, from Quadrant Park, I think. Yeah.
That, inverted commas, Quadrant Park footage. Like, that's almost the perfect antithesis of what you're describing. They're different things, technically bound by Ray, but they're almost entirely different.
So, sorry, just to add to that, after lockdown, that wasn't the case. I can remember doing X, what's it called, X or Y O, in the back room for Goldie.
As in, people can care about Ferns and just want it in.
It was like going back. We were playing tracks from 30 years ago, and it was just like a load of 15, 16-year-old kids who, the first time they'd been out, it reminded me of 1991.
They wanted to be together again.
Yeah.
Also, if they're 15, 16, they haven't been out before. Mm. This is their first proper opportunity to go to a nightclub.
People wanted to be together again. It was that sense of belonging, wasn't it? And in all of those early shows, it was far less about, as in the early comeback after lockdown shows, it was far less about, maybe people weren't, dare I say it, bored. I think this is the thing. It's a different setup, and I'm not going to name clubs or even certainly not DJs, but some of it is almost preset theatre. We're going to go here. We're going to look good for the camera. We're going to take our photo pre. We're going to take our photo on the drinks. We're going to take about 6 or 7 pieces of video. We'll upload them to TikTok and we'll go home. Mm-hmm. And those things have to have an almost cinematic, theatrical, lit up feel. It's the moment, and it's ex-DJ exploding that moment. That is not the same reason as going.
If you didn't do that, how'd you really gone?
Well, I'm not sure you even can, because I think in those there's a huge difference between, let's say, going to maybe a massive show in Oshawa where that happens a lot versus going to the Dance Throne Pipe. There isn't a photo moment in the Dance Throne Pipe. I'm not saying that's the greatest club.
No, there really isn't.
But there ain't the dance floor because it's so flipping dingy and there's no lights at all. And you try and take footage because it's so wonderful and it looks terrible.
Mm.
And guess what? Every single person crammed on that dance floor is there to dance.
Mm.
And I'm not saying, oh, that's bad. I'm just saying it's a different... It's like going to the theatre, going to an immersive play. It's a different thing that you're going to, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So since we're talking about Ibiza, I think that tees us up quite nicely for the next song, which is a track that I played to you last year, because we went to Ibiza last year, listeners. And I played it to you in a hotel room at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I was amazed that you'd never heard it before. It's a UK-made house classic from, I'm going to say, about 87. I think it was 87.
Is it bad that I can't remember you playing it?
And this is... It's not that surprising. And this is called Carino by Tikoi. So that was Tikoi Carino, 1987, Mike Pickering produced. So 100% Manchester record this was. And it's kind of, again, it's been a bit slept on. You know, I've always thought of it as a bit of a house, early house classic, but hardly anyone seems to know it. You didn't know it, and most of the people I play it to,
never. I don't recall you playing
it. I mean, glad it made such an impression in Ibiza.
I didn't know it then, I don't know it now.
You literally jumped off the bed in Ibiza and going, what is this?
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, interesting. Mike Pickering was involved.
Pickering, and of course, him and Graham Part used to do Nude at the Hacienda. I mean, Pickering and Part were arguably the first famous DJing duo in the UK, I would say, for in the house world at least.
He's still super influential. I was on a Zoom call. Was it B. Calvin Harris? Is that who works with? Yeah. Like, he's still a big dog in the scene, actually. He's seen as this super revered guru, musically kind of character.
He's done it all, hasn't he? Right?
MP.
That was him.
And, I mean, this was on Deconstruction, which was, I'm sure he had something to do with that label, didn't it?
Probably, yeah.
It's a good position to be in, though, isn't it? Just being this sort of Don. Overlord, like Don of a son. Like, great.
I mean, I remember hearing it at, I was at a party in a disused railway tunnel just outside Bristol.
This sounds good.
And it was run weirdly. It was run by travellers, and normally traveller music is quite acid techno squat stuff, Chris Liberator style, that sort of thing. But they were playing this, maybe because of the end of the night. I just remember finding it really hard to dance because I was in a dark, disused tunnel and there was railway sleepers. And,
got it. The sleepers really put you off. The glide into the dance floor struggles when you've got massive railways.
Tripping over those rails was a real problem. But I do remember this track playing. And I love weird places to dance.
Was it a good party? It sounds terrific.
It was great. It was absolutely brilliant. It was, you could sort of see Bristol from, you know, when you popped out of the railway tunnel. It's amazing it didn't get shut down. It's incredible. There's like 500 people in the
tunnel. I think we touched upon this in a previous show, but there's a real revival at the moment of the kind of interesting scene, location, dance floors that are different, parties in different places, trucks turning up, utility vehicles, you know, corrugated iron places popping up. That's a vibe at the moment. It's going to be a big thing in the next couple of years, these kind of pop-up raves in wicked locations. It's hot.
If anyone wants to invite us to any of these, we'll come. I mean, you know, we're old, but we do still go out.
Combined age of... I dread to think.
Let's not get into that.
Let's not say that. But we do still go out, although, you know, only
152.
Once a year.
On Sunday. Yeah, you're right. God, that was good math there.
Sorry, what? I didn't even hear
152.
It. Bloody hell. Wow. Is that including the young producer?
Yeah, that's the thing. Oh no, he would bring our average down, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Are we doing mean, median, or mode?
I think we've got time for just one more track. This is again a sort of outlier. Not many people know it. Actually, Tunde, you'll appreciate this. This apparently, I remember reading, is. I read it in Music Magazine years ago. If when LTJ Bookham listed his top 10 house tracks, this was number one.
Ooh.
That's the reaction I was looking for.
That's perks. A mild
woo.
LTJ. Do you remember the LTJ Bookham sample at the start of his records? And he'd do the real. And he'll do the real Brummy accent. LTJ.
And this was released in 87. It also, interestingly, made it onto. I don't really play video games, but it was on a Grand Theft Auto. If you go onto the radio bit of Grand Theft Auto and choose the house station, this was one of the tracks.
I'm so saying, I'm showing my age. I walked into Virgin Megastore in its day on Tottenham Court Road and Bookham was playing a set in there. Now, what era was that? LTJ Bookham playing Virgin Megastore on Tottenham Court Road. It must have been 97? And I'm guessing something like that. They were good days. Really, though?
You know when the essential mixes were a thing and it was like when someone from your scene... It's like Goodfellas.
You couldn't
believe it. You know when that's someone from the Gets Made. Yeah. It was like,
oh, that's a brilliant analogy.
It was like when Bookham got.
Hold on, let's just stop with that. Yeah. I don't think people have heard that. Eddie, you're saying it's the Goodfellas Italian mafia vibe of they get made, like the Joe Pesci character then before he got killed. And you're saying everyone celebrates that moment, they're made, they're turned into the Don.
That show was so big, the Central Mix was so big, wasn't it, really? And
someone like an Alex Rees or a Booker, whoever the hell it was from that era, finally making it.
Yeah,
that,
it was like someone who we've known is the Don for so many years is now getting the flowers nationally. So people from other scenes, DJs, A&Rs, everyone's going to listen to the music, which is this thing of ours. Do you know what I mean? It's like not ours as we're making it, but it's like as our scene.
So that happened really briefly in about 96, 97, when, I mean, you'll know about me because you were quite literally in it and I was just a fan. But I remember writing, which is funny, to my mate who was in the States. But me and him used to go and buy like D&B records and stuff as kids, basically. And I was like, mate, you won't believe it. Alex Rees is number 4 in the charts. Brilliant. And it was almost felt like this thing that we'd been quietly listening to, recording shows from Colin Favre and Colin Dale on the radio, but down in Kent, had suddenly become big and real and crossed over. And it felt a weird thing to clock. But you must have been reaping the benefits of that.
Well, I mean, I was still raving probably in those days trying to get on, but I suppose drum and bass or jungle, whatever you want to call it, we'd always seen ourselves as like the bastard child of really? House music. Do you know what I mean? It was like,
and then it was suddenly massive. But it was really brief, wasn't it?
But what sort of a thing you have the same thing. Is like you want everyone to like what you like, but also you don't want anyone to like it.
It's briefly amazing. It's number 4 on the charts, and I really don't like the fact that everyone knows that Alex Rees Candles.
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't it? But great that, you know, 20-odd years later or whatever, it makes it onto a video game soundtrack. And it reminds me of the time I was flown out to Ibiza for the launch of do you remember the Wipeout video game on PlayStation? Yeah. And the reason they flew us out to Ibiza, a bunch of press out to Ibiza, was because Wipeout had some really good tracks on it, actually. It had Left Field track, I can't remember what else, but it had a load of big sort of hitters from the dance scene and had tracks licensed to this video game. And it was an interesting trip. They put us up at the Manumission Hotel, which was an experience in itself, but funnier still was the fact that I took the then entertainment editor of, do you remember Sky magazine? It's closed now. It was a massive magazine in its day. I took the entertainment editor of that magazine out, who was a total Ibiza virgin.
Mm-hmm. This is going to bode well.
We started the night in a bar. Then he was traveling with his girlfriend for some reason. She left the bar, and I said, right, you're with me. I took him first to cream at Amnesia. Christ. When that finished at, I think, 6 a.m., we trotted across to Playa del Bossa, and we made it into the opening of Space at 8 a.m.
Oh, my God.
And I think
this is his first time on the island.
Never been to the island before. And I think he sort of forgot that his girlfriend was there, because the next thing we know, it's about 10 a.m. Uh-huh. We're on a dance platform, and somebody must have told her that we were in space. She comes in looking for him.
Oh, no,
she finds us both standing on the dance floor and just starts ranting at him. And the poor guy looks so scared. He'd obviously just totally forgotten he had a girlfriend. Yeah. He jumped off the dance platform. And I remember asking in a sort of, I thought, quite hospitable way, you know, can I help you get a cab or something like that? And I'll never forget, she just said to me, I think you've done quite enough, thank you.
I didn't
really see them for the rest of the press trip. They kind of dodged me, but it was a lot of fun.
Did the articles get written about the game, or the
I don't help? Remember writing. I think we printed a few pictures.
Yeah.
It's
not like you.
Me in front of a Wipeout banner.
Not like you to fulfil the obligations of the press trip, Scott.
Listeners won't know the. I have. I used to have something of a reputation for not fully fulfilling the client brief.
I don't know, mate. I think a week in a 5-star hotel in Thailand is deserved of a 4-line nib in the Evening Standard.
Anyway, we are sadly running out of time. We've got one more great track to play you. And this is another really old one, another one from 1987. It's called The Morning After by Fallout. And this was a famous New York production duo, Lenny D and Tommy Musto. Tommy Musto went in a sort of house direction after this. Lenny D went much more in a sort of techno direction. But it was originally like a 17-minute track, apparently, but they boiled it down into what you're going to hear now. It's deep, it's mellow, it's interesting, as I said, it was on the GTA San Andreas video game soundtrack. So let's go. That's it from us. Pipe and Slip Mats Volume 8 is done. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate all of you guys, each and every one of you. It's so much fun to do.
Don't give them too much thanks. They're on their beach towels. They're like by the pool. We're putting the work in. We're here at 9 p.m. on a cold Wednesday night, whatever it is. They're all right. We're working for them.
Yeah.
They should be thanking us.
You're absolutely right. So please do send in your thanks to the usual address.
Yeah, what is that address?
I'm just thinking about the beach towel on the beach. God, that's good. But yeah, I like this song. I think it's a nice ending. It's chirpy.
And hopefully if we can get this out in time, we're going to be in Ibiza July the 12th to the 16th. Find us at Pikes on July the 12th. Find us at High on the 13th. Find us at Sasha and Digweed on the 14th.
I won't be there.
And if we don't see you there, we will see you on the dance floor, perhaps.
I suppose also, if we don't get it out, then welcome to the Pipe and Slip Mats Christmas special.
Pipe and Slip Mats done.